pioneering musical artist Rhiannon Giddens. We spoke in October 2023, the day she received the Pulitzer Prize for her opera, Omar. When we come back, we'll talk about her song, Another Wasted Life, and how she worked on the song's video with 22 people who were wrongly incarcerated.
You're listening to WGXC Acro, 90.7 FM.
The Catskill Food Pantry is located in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church at 50 William Street in Catskill. The pantry is open to the public every Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Healthy food is a right. For more information, please feel welcome to visit the pantry. Call us at 551-299-2456. Check the website at catskillfoodpantry.org or connect with us on Facebook at Catskill Food Pantry.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Bernsey's Multimedia Services, providing the Hudson Valley with a variety of video production services, including help to keep those wedding memories fresh. For more information, visit BernseyMedia.com or call them at 518-860-2751 or email BernseyMMS at gmail.com, B-U-R-N-S-Y-M-M-S at gmail.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Shannon Greer in Hudson, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service DOA Newscast, June the 19th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. Organizing to end hunger is one tool groups are using in Oregon to highlight and address the issue. Workers say advocacy is especially important in rural parts of the state where food insecurity is higher. Eric Tegenhoff explains.
Eddie Melendrez is a community organizer for Oregon Food Bank, based in Ontario in the southeast part of the state. He says pantry sites have seen increased need as food assistance from the pandemic has expired. Melendrez says people can make their voices heard on the issue of hunger.
It's very important so folks kind of see the power that they have, that they maybe didn't know that they did have, and how they take collective action to make change in their communities, to ask questions, to show up, and to hold our elected officials accountable.
According to data released by Feeding America in 2022, the average rate of food insecurity in Oregon was about 13%. The rates were even higher than the state average in eastern parts of the state. In Malheur County, where Ontario is located, the food insecurity rate was 16%.
More than 100 organizations, including the Oregon Food Bank, are pushing for the state to pass Food for All Oregonians legislation, which would open up food access for people of different immigrant status. Next, from CNN, outgoing Boeing chief Dave Calhoun faced bipartisan criticism against the company's safety, transparency, and quality standards during Tuesday's Senate hearing. They report he acknowledged that the company had retaliated against employees who have raised safety concerns. Before his opening remarks, he stood from the witness table, turned around to apologize to family members of Boeing 737 MAX victims. They were present in the room with photos of their loved ones. CNN notes Boeing is under intense scrutiny from several regulators after a series of safety missteps earlier this year, including a door plug that blew off an Alaska Airlines flight shortly after takeoff in January. And Connecticut is one state not impacted by the recent Supreme Court gun ruling.
In Garland versus Cargill, the court overturned a federal bump stock ban the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives implemented after a 2017 mass shooting. Authorities found most of the shooter's weapons had a bump stock, which enabled someone to fire multiple rounds at a rapid pace. Melissa Kane with Connecticut Against Gun Violence says federal action must follow this ruling.
Legislation to ban bump stocks have already been introduced in the U.S. House and Senate, and the Congress has the power to change the law and ban bump stocks now to keep these kind of weapons off of our streets and out of our communities, but it has to happen.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has signaled he'll call for a vote on legislation banning bump stocks, but the big challenge Kane sees for implementing such a ban is coming up, political gridlock. Senate Democrats support Schumer's proposal, but GOP senators say they'll block the legislation. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
15 states and the District of Columbia have bump stock bans, which remain in effect since the ruling covers the ATF rule, not the constitutionality of state bans. This is Public News Service. Minnesota is sorting out details ahead of trying to meet its 100% carbon-free electricity goal by 2040. Some environmental advocates feel energy sources being floated to regulators would defeat the purpose of the new law.
The state's Public Utilities Commission is accepting public comment on which technologies should make the list of energy options defined under the law. That means utilities, advocacy organizations, and others are lining up with their input. Hudson Kingston of the group Clean Up the River Environment worries certain recommendations he feels are dubious will make the final cut.
Comments suggesting that burning wood, burning biomass, burning trash are all, in some people's way of thinking, carbon-free, even though when you burn things like wood, you are emitting quite a lot of carbon.
The Minnesota Forest Resources Partnership contends that burning limbs from harvested trees or wood left over from fires or disease restoration projects is a viable substitute for fossil fuel production. I'm Mike Moen.
Meantime, Alabama has a goal to reduce recidivism by 50% by 2030. But a recent Prison Fellowship report warns that state-level barriers to critical needs may hinder their progress.
Every year, thousands of men and women are released from state prisons and jails. However, despite repaying their debt to society, they encounter roadblocks that hinder their successful reintegration. These so-called collateral consequences affect their access to housing, education, and more. Kate Trammell from the Prison Fellowship emphasizes the need to address these obstacles to empower returning citizens to build better lives.
So one of the first things that policymakers or voters should be thinking about their neighbors with a criminal record, is how can we help ensure that they aren't prevented from accessing safe, affordable housing? How can we ensure that they aren't prevented from accessing meaningful jobs?
In Alabama alone, there are 824 barriers impeding an individual's journey toward a second chance. Shantia Hudson reporting.
Finally, our Kathleen Shannon lets us know that as Pride Month winds down, health advocates want members of the LGBTQ plus community to know about health care options despite any challenges to obtaining them.
Nearly 8% of U.S. adults identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, or some other sexual orientation besides heterosexual, according to 2023 data. That's more than double the number in 2012. Kenny Starling, owner of Wyoming's debut drag and theater production company, says healthcare can feel like a taboo topic, especially for queer people.
And then on top of that, the actual healthcare providers themselves being up to date on the information about queer individuals and the resources that should be available to us.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations on your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, June 19th. Local early morning temperatures range from 65 degrees in Medusa to 74 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 68 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium and air quality will be moderate. Okay, we are getting into the nasty part of the week. Fortunately, highest temps have revised downward slightly. No one's going to be hitting triple digits. However, heat advisories are still out. So, stay cool, stay hydrated, avoid that sun, check up on anyone you think may have any difficulty cooling off for whatever reason. That includes big tough adults heading out to work in the heat. Sports drinks are a good idea so you can maintain potassium and electrolyte levels. And pay extra attention to the living creatures you leave in that pizza oven you call a car. It is kind of comfortable early this morning. Humidity definitely not helping. Head inside by 9 a.m. because it's just nasty after that. A high of 92 happens at 2 p.m. and lingers for a couple hours. Things get back to comfortable for about 2 hours Thursday morning. Then we get another high of 92, this time with bonus storm activity in the afternoon. 72 very sticky degrees overnight takes us into a more stormy Friday with a high of only 88 degrees. Nighttime temperatures drop to 66, but your AC is still going to be running to eliminate the humidity. Saturday, stormy, high of 88 again. Sunday, pretty much the same deal. Good weekend to get inside stuff done because that's where we're all likely to be. For the brave and well hydrated, today's tide schedule is high tide at 1:32 a.m., low tide at 8:20 a.m., high tide again at 1:57 p.m., and low tide once again at 8:10 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 74 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:20 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be average at 524 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 150. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Next, we take off with Donald Byrd and Flight Time. We'll be right back.
We're talking with Molly Robinson, who is with Resources for the Future, and recently with the New York City Environmental Justice Alliance. They've put out another sort of policy brief on the proposed cap, trade, and invest program that the New York State is slowly developing to both sort of put a price on carbon from various greenhouse gas emitters, but also the cap part is to try to use it as a way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And this particular policy brief focuses on the question as to whether or not the electricity sector, which is the third largest sector in terms of greenhouse gas emissions after buildings and transportation, should be included. So, Molly, maybe just give us a brief introduction. What is cap and invest, and why has the issue of whether or not electricity production should be included actually even come up as an issue?
Well, thanks for having me, Mark. So as you mentioned, the cap and invest system is a means of capping the greenhouse gas emissions that the state is required to reduce by law from the Community Leadership or Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. The cap and trade program would set a hard cap on emissions and entities that emit carbon dioxide or other greenhouse gases would be required to purchase allowances for each ton of carbon that they emit. And as you can imagine, when you have to pay for that pollution, you might find ways to reduce your carbon footprint. And so that's really the goal of such a program, is to force emitters to pay a price for their emissions and to incentivize emissions reduction behaviors. The question about obligating electricity, this cap and invest program is being framed as an economy-wide program, but there's of course choices about which sectors will be asked to pay for these allowances. And electricity is a little complicated because when we think about the ways in which the transportation sector and the residential sector are going to decarbonize, they're going to do so by electrifying. By changing a gasoline vehicle to an electric vehicle. And one of the things that the state expressed concern about in their pre-proposal analysis was about the impact on electricity prices of obligating the electricity sector. Basically, if you force power plants to purchase allowances, the electricity prices could go up, and maybe that makes you less likely to buy an EV or a heat pump to heat your house, and that would actually slow down the transition that they're hoping to spur on. At the same time, as you mentioned, the electricity sector is a major source of emissions itself from power plants that produce emissions. And generators are disproportionately near disadvantaged communities, and the emissions that they give off lead to pollution and negative impacts in their surrounding communities. So there's a lot of things to think about, and part of our goal in this research was to really dig into some of these details and see what the impacts of obligating the electricity sector might be.
Now, one of the other complicating factors with electricity production is that the state actually has an existing cap and trade program known as REGI, Regional Greenhouse Gas Inventory. And so part of the argument, well, we already have, you know, something going on with electricity production. The Congressional Research Service, at least on its first iteration of REGI, found it was not actually particularly successful in reducing emissions, partly because the initial cap that was placed on it was so low, and the initial price was only about $6 a ton per carbon, which was, you know, even lower than what Governor Hochul is considering. Do we have any sense where the Governor Hochul administration is leaning on this issue at this point in terms of whether or not they will, you know, decide to exclude electrical production? And, you know, what are some of the other impacts that you all are concerned about, particularly in low-income neighborhoods, if electric production was not included in cap and invest?
Yeah, so based on the state's pre-proposal analysis, they presented a few different data points for why they might be thinking about excluding the power sector. Among those, as I mentioned, a potential impact on electricity prices. Another issue is this consideration of what we call leakage, which is when you have markets that cross state boundaries, you might reduce your emissions in New York, but instead you end up buying more power from New Jersey and increasing emissions there. And so you haven't really, on net necessarily, reduced the overall greenhouse gas problem. So what we found in our research is we looked specifically at a system in which the region is in the RGGI program, as you said, and New York remains in RGGI and in the Cap and Invest program in New York State. And emitters are credited for what they pay in the RGGI program, but they have to pay for those more expensive New York cap and trade allowances. And what we found is that this does have a significant downward pressure on emissions in the power sector in New York State. And that's on top of the other things that are included in the CLCPA, which includes the technology mandates for wind and solar, which includes the clean energy standard. We found that carbon pricing through cap and trade gets even more emissions reductions on top of that. We also found that this impact disproportionately benefits disadvantaged communities. As I said, most of the generators, more than 50% of them, are near disadvantaged communities in New York. So when the emissions go down, it disproportionately benefits those nearby disadvantaged communities. We also looked at facility-specific caps. I know that we looked at this in our first report, and I talked to you about that. But we wanted to understand, what if you had facility-specific emissions caps in the power sector, whether the electricity sector was obligated or not? And we found that if the state decides to not obligate the electricity sector, these facility-specific caps that force power plants to reduce their emissions, each power plant to reduce their emissions by a certain level, get even more emissions reductions out of the system. So we really were looking across a variety of metrics and impacts, and we found that even when you obligate the electricity sector, the change in the electricity price is minimal in our modeling, and it wouldn't be enough to significantly impact the electrification trajectory of residential buildings or transportation sectors.
And this is also one of the concerns is the cap trade and invest program. You know, focuses on the greenhouse gas emissions. Most people focus on carbon and methane, but there's also pollutants from power plants in particular that, you know, go into these low-income neighborhoods, and those other pollutants are not something that's being factored in at this point by the state?
That's right. In the cap and trade program is focused on the greenhouse gas emissions. Those are what are, you know, the mandated reductions in the climate law. But as you mentioned, there are sulfur dioxides, nitrous oxides, particulate matter, PM2.5, we call it, that have really significant health impacts in terms of air quality for communities. And those emissions are really highly correlated with burning fossil fuels and what produces carbon and greenhouse gas emissions. So we want to think about not only what the greenhouse gas impacts of these policies are, but also how it affects these, what we call co-pollutants. And so we did find that obligating the electricity sector and adding facility-specific caps produces a significant PM2.5. That's, you know, a precursor for air quality. It creates PM2.5 reductions, especially at power plants near disadvantaged communities. So, you know, by targeting greenhouse gases, you still can get these co-pollutant reductions. The state may consider capping those co-pollutants directly in addition to greenhouse gases if they so choose.
You know, the state had sort of at this point had hoped to be able to actually start moving towards its final regulations on the cap and invest program. But as normal, the state is moving much slower than anticipated. So who knows when this will be finished. And people, we've been talking with Molly Robinson, Resources for the Future. If people want to see your report, find out about Resources for the Future, you get a website.
Yeah, that's rff.org.
Thank you very much. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Yeah, this is Willie Gilroman, labor correspondent for the Hustle Mohawk magazine. And I'm still here at the Underground Railroad Education Center, where they're having a Juneteenth celebration. And I'm here with some young people who are volunteering here to do work at today's Juneteenth celebration. Well, I have as my guest, and it's quite a few, so I'm going to go around.
I'm Ron.
Ron what? You got a last name?
Reynoso.
Okay.
Franz Gopalsing.
I'm Raymond Reynoso.
Ove Vallis.
Jonathan Borrow.
Omaria and King.
Okay. All right.
A lot of heads.
Just want to, start. I mean, Juneteenth is a serious day. So I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on Juneteenth? When did you first learn about Juneteenth?
I recently figured out, 2 years ago about this, and, I think it's just crazy that...
Was it in high school, or...?
I actually came here.
Oh, you came here?
Yeah, just visiting. And I learned about it here, and then I was inspired by what they're doing. I wanted to do it, too. And, yeah. And my family didn't know about it, because they're, immigrants from, a different country.
So now, what's your name again?
Ron. Rainey.
Yeah. All right.
And your name?
I'm Ove.
Okay, Ove.
I first heard about Juneteenth in 8th grade, and I'm in 12th grade. I mean, I just graduated recently, so I'm out of school, and that's a few years ago. So I learned about it through my social studies class, and we went over basically everything about how they were set free, but they weren't actually set free. And that, deepened my knowledge with Juneteenth, the event, and everything.
Well, did you learn any African-American history in high school?
High school? Nah, I didn't learn anything in high school.
I want to say that people that can't see him, but his hair, Frederick Douglass.
What? That's crazy.
Right? Look at Frederick Douglass. He had this hair just like yours.
What?
where did your style come from?
I just took my hair out. I usually have cornrows. No, I don't. It's not brand fries. I just took my hair out. Yeah, recently. So I'm waiting to get it braided again. Yeah.
Right. So your family didn't know anything about Juneteenth?
Nah, they're also from the Caribbean, out of the country. Yeah.
Are you from out of country?
No. But my dad's from Haiti and my mom's from Guyana.
From Guyana?
Yeah. And I know all the history between Haiti and yeah, the rebellion.
History.
Yeah. I'm not really fond of American history like that.
Yeah. All right. Let me go to him. Thank you. Excuse me. And what's your name?
My name is Franz Gopalsing.
Okay. So, Franz, tell me some about your thoughts on Juneteenth.
Oh, my thoughts on it? I was about to tell you a fact. So, my thoughts on Juneteenth, it's a great event. I celebrate it, almost every year. I've been celebrating this event for 4 years now. I learned about it from the Underground Railroad Education Center here, actually. And
so, there was nothing in high school?
Nothing in high school about Juneteenth. Yeah, they don't teach Juneteenth in high school. It's not very talked about. It's not even in their books. And my parents didn't know about it neither, as they didn't get taught it in high school as well. I really just had to figure it out from the Underground Railroad Education Center.
Where are your parents from?
My parents are both from Brooklyn. My dad, he immigrated to Brooklyn, and my mom, she was born in Brooklyn.
He immigrated from where?
He immigrated from Trinidad.
Trinidad, oh, okay. Do you know about Kwame Ture? Stokely Carmichael? Kwame Ture was one of the leaders in the civil rights movement here in this country, but he was from Trinidad.
My name is Raymond.
And Raymond, tell me your thoughts.
So, compared to everybody else, I learned about it in middle school because I had this one teacher that was adamant about African history, and he taught us about Juneteenth. So he just told me about He just told me everything about Black history, Juneteenth, Marcus Garvey.
But what did he tell you about Juneteenth?
Oh, he just told me it was the day that slaves were told that they were free, in Texas. And then, other than that, pretty much it was just a little brief explanation about it. Other than that, in high school, they never really mentioned it. And then I learned about it more during the Underground Railroad Education Center, yeah.
And where your family from?
So my family's from the Dominican Republic, so they don't really learn that stuff over there. So it's not in their, I don't think it's in their history curriculum.
Right.
Yeah.
But Dominican Republic has a history of slavery.
Yeah.
Right, and go way back.
Yeah.
Right. Have you studied into that history?
Not really, because I think I mean, over here, they don't really teach anything about that. That's something that I had to teach myself during my own time, which I should probably do that. Yeah. But I'll do that later on, you know.
And what's your name?
Jonathan Borrow.
Jonathan
Borrow.
Right. Yeah. So Jonathan, tell me some about what are your thoughts on Juneteenth.
I think Juneteenth, it's a very good holiday and a very inaugural part of United States history, which is severely like underthought in, which is like severely underthought in our education system, and I think like we should make efforts as like people to like enforce it more into like the education system to like teach the upcoming generation more about it, so they won't be like as ignorant as like how we are.
But it's not a good holiday.
Yeah, it's not a good holiday, but that's history though. Right. It's good and bad. Yeah.
Right. And tell me something about your family.
So my family's mostly African.
From where?
Ghana. Yeah, mostly Ghana. Go ahead. Yeah.
Go ahead. Ghana.
From Ghana and
what part of Ghana?
My parents are from the north.
North Ghana.
Yeah, the northern side of Ghana, and they came here. Yeah. And they immigrated here, and I went to school here and did other stuff here, too. Yeah.
I've been to Ghana.
Oh, you've been to Ghana?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm
okay.
So, you know,
where?
Kwame Nkrumah.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kwame Nkrumah.
Yeah, the first president.
So,
yeah.
What do you heard about Kwame Nkrumah?
He was, like, a very heavy Pan-Africanist. And he helped in, like, the, like, independence of several other African countries. And him and MLK and Malcolm X, they both had, like, most of them had the same school of thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then he went back to Ghana after going to college at the University of Pennsylvania to fight for the, like...
African liberation. So, what are your thoughts? What's going on in Ghana today?
The old colonial countries in Africa still play, like, a very huge role up to today. And they, to me personally, I think they intentionally sabotage the economy to make sure that these African countries never develop or progress to be independent on their own, like, fully financially and, like, totally independent. And they always tap into the resources of these countries every single time. Yeah.
Right.
And it's still happening today, unfortunately.
So all y'all in high school or graduate? You graduated?
College too.
Uh-huh. You're in college?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me, just one last question I want to ask y'all, because this is important. Now, we have a lot of young people out there, you know, who on the borderline, you know, they don't know what to do, they thinking, they getting into trouble, some of them, but, you know, they need some guidance.
Yeah.
I want to ask y'all, what guidance, or what would you tell young people why it's important to stay in school or learn, study history?
Like, right now, in our generation, there's mostly, like, several other ways you could be successful without college. But I would, like, recommend, like, just use college as a backup plan. Just in case your, yeah, like, just in case your dreams don't come true or something. You still have something to fall back on. And at times, like, right now, like, being black, mostly, like, going to college is, like, a huge flex because of, like, the system's place against, like, us. It's mostly, like, harder to, like, go through the whole college process smoothly.
All right, let me go ahead and ask Frederick Douglass.
You don't I read the autobiography.
Yeah,
I read
it.
Yeah. Yeah, similar to what John was saying, I would say you could still reach for your goals, but always have, like, a backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
So if it doesn't work, like, how you want it to, you're always going to have a plan that's, like, set in stone. A degree is always going to be there. It's not going to change. But, yeah, that's really it. You continue with school unless you got something else going on.
Right. And you also can use those skills to help your community.
Yeah, literally.
Right. What do kids do out there in high school? Should they just play basketball and don't do nothing else?
Nah, you should have a balance between, like, work, like, schoolwork, school, and, like, your own life. So, like, have, like, a schedule and everything. Because if you don't, then you're going to, like, ruin your future. You always need to have, like, some type of, like, stability.
What about you?
I'm a graduating senior of Albany High School. And the problem with a lot of us is that we don't come to school because we think we're too old for it now. So there's no balance, like Ronald just said. So the reason most of us aren't graduating is just because we aren't there. We think, oh, we don't have time for school, and
people don't understand that school is a privilege, you know? It wasn't a thing that we always had. So when people say they don't have time and they just want, oh, I'm not going to school, I'm going to go straight to work anyway, it doesn't matter. You basically can't do anything without your high school diploma, first of all. And second of all, this is education you're missing out on. So you miss out on your school education. What about when you go to college? What about when you get to the real world? You're not going to know a lot of things that people know. And you're supposed to be the future. You're supposed to educate people. You're supposed to educate others. How are you going to educate others when you can't even educate yourself? So that's my problem with most of the seniors now.
And you said something important about it's a privilege now. Because there was a time people study history, especially if they go back to Juneteenth, we wasn't allowed to read, write, and there was no schools for our people. And not only here, but also in Africa. So I want to thank y'all for those wise words. Y'all don't realize y'all gave some wise information. You may think it's, but it was some good information. Thank y'all.
Here from New Zealand is the Tall Dwarfs with the brain that wouldn't die. Next, let's tune in half Japanese with Put Some Sugar on It.
Let's do it one more time. Okay, one, two, three.
Yeah.
Here's Catskill-based Lily Konigsberg with Seven Smile on the radio at WGXC.
Changing day by day, I hear.
That was Albert Eiler with Love Cry on the radio at WGXC and Wave Farm.